So get on it. Get up on it. Get up on it.
9% ABV, ladies and gentlemen.
I have to go pick up my kid at elementary school.
Yes.
This whole hashtag G100 may take us about 100 episodes to get through.
Well, no. I mean, we're not going to talk specifically about each movie. That one I talk at length about because everyone's
the
seen
only
it
one
but
that
me.
Seen.
Everyone's seen it.
Right.
How did I go
how did you not
20
see
years without seeing Backdraft? And I love Kurt Russell. I
did
love
you know
him.
What was going to happen? Was it a surprise?
Oh, the end?
With who the bad guy was.
Sort of. The problem with it, I think it would have been a really surprise, a big surprise then. Because he's been a bad guy
a lot
since then.
It's, yeah.
But coming up, he was a pretty big good guy in B movies. Do you know what I mean? He wasn't like John Travolta.
And how
good
did you
guy.
Feel about, you know, the Kurt Russell hanging on there?
It's an action movie, you know, and it's a Ron Howard ending.
You gotta let me go.
It's a Ron Howard ending, you know. It was fine. But you know I love Kurt Russell. I love the guy.
Yeah.
Love the guy, and I'm always willing to watch him. I watched Dark Blue, for God's sake. I love the guy.
Right.
From there, I went to a series of movies that I'd heard of but not gotten around to see, mixed in with some chance for random goodness.
Before you jump into the rest of yours, two quick points. One, comparing your list to Grog's list. I've only seen one movie on yours, and that was Backdraft.
Right.
I've seen most of the movies on Grog's list, and his first movie, though, is just as shocking as your first movie. He had not seen Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people skipped it.
Because he thought it was a horror film. He thought it was a horror movie.
No, Linda, my girlfriend, I showed it to her about a month ago. She thought the same thing. She's like, I don't watch horror movies.
It's absolutely not a horror movie.
The Academy does not give Best Picture to a horror movie.
Right.
In fact, you don't even see anybody
get killed in this movie. They don't show you any gruesome scenes.
I mean, they show you gruesome images.
But
you don't see the action that caused the gruesomeness.
It's not shocking like you would today. Like, if they made Silence of the Lambs today, they would show you somebody being dissected.
Well, and you saw that when they remade Manhunter and turned it into the novel of, you know, the Red Dragon. Manhunter from the 80s was much more tame in terms of visuals, but also great, directed by Michael Mann, than when it was redone as Red Dragon. But a lot of people just haven't seen that. And like I say, Greg's younger, and I think he'll correct me if I'm wrong, but he came to his severe addictive love of movies, which he has now, which I applaud him for, relatively later in life than I did. So there's a ton of stuff that he hasn't seen that I have, but I think he's choosing some great stuff. And a lot of the stuff that I've seen on his list – I haven't seen either, and is on my list. So I love his.
So you're
going
to get around to it, yeah. So there. That was his first one, Silence of the Lambs, and I would say most people know about it. I mean, and it's such an important movie that we have a TV show.
Well,
now.
And it's also from 1991, which is what mine was from. We both chose thrillers from 1991,
right? Interesting.
Our first movie.
So,
which leads us to our second movie, where I chose a
Bound for Glory,
which is a biopic of Woody Guthrie starring David Carradine, from 1976. And what did he choose?
Cannonball
from 1976, starring David Carradine.
Right.
So we're on the same page with
our
June 100 things.
Right. It is. That is.
Now, I loved Bound for Glory. If people like biopics, I highly recommend it. It's directed by Hal Ashby, which I think he is a Hall of Fame director. He's pretty great, and the cast is kind of amazing.
Ronnie Cox, Molly Dillon.
No, it's terrific. I mean, Mary Kay Place,
and you know,
James Hong, the immortal James Hong, who we know and love.
And I think it's important to note, this is Robert Getchell wrote the screenplay, but it's based on Woody Guthrie's autobiography.
Yes. And this is one of the long ones that I chose. This one's
right, longer than I wanted it to be. 147 minutes.
Yeah, longer than I wanted it to be. Not because it was bad at all, but because I have a limited amount of time right. to watch a lot of movies.
Right. So, I mean, what your third movie?
The Ambassador, which is really interesting. This is what Netflix has done now. And literally the first day of June, I noticed that on my Netflix interface, there is a category now that's called Random Picks.
Right, and I haven't seen this. I haven't noticed this.
Sure. I love it because it's a mixture of stuff that I have seen and stuff that I haven't seen.
Now, for the listeners, how do you experience your Netflix mostly?
Mostly what I do is I choose my movies on the computer because the interface works faster.
So this is probably...
And then I watch them on TV.
Right, right. So you load it up on your computer so you can find that stuff on your...
Yes.
So your user interface on your TV, though, is through the TV or through a DVD player?
It's through the TV. Okay. I have a 3D smart TV.
Okay. Because it is important because your Netflix experience depends on your device.
Yes.
I watch my Netflix through Roku.
Yes. And how is your Roku? Basically, my TV has a Roku built in. That's basically the same thing.
Right. I mean, they're all kind of the same.
It just turns your TV into a smart TV.
It's just every single one of them has
little
designs their own user interface.
Example.
So it looks different. Because I have the Sony Blu-ray DVD player, which also has Hulu Plus
right.
and all of those. But the interfaces between one to the other are all very different. And Roku just redesigned theirs. It had a whole new one. And I haven't noticed this random pick thing yet.
Well, what do they call a Whopper?
A what?
No, I'm sorry. That was a Pulp Fiction reference. Anyway, so The Ambassador was the next one that I picked. And in all the advertising that I see for it, they're calling it like Borat, but in real life, which is just a really lazy way of saying that it's about a guy. It's a fish out of water story about
right.
a guy going to an unfamiliar country. But what this is a documentary that's really odd. And I highly recommend it. I don't want to talk too much about it, but it's about a guy who goes into a poorer kind of lawless part of the world and pretends to be something he's not to see how the people with machine guns react.
So you have to read this movie?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. There's plenty of subtitles, but there's
okay.
plenty of English, too. Anyway, I recommend it. The next one I chose was one I had never heard of until Netflix.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. 1983.
Yes.
With David Bowie and Tom Conti.
Yes. And it bears talking about Takeshi, I believe is how you pronounce it, who is a huge freaking star in Japan and all over the world over the last 10 years. But this is his first feature film. Or at least the first one that came to international attention. He did. He's a comedian, writer, actor, director. He's a huge star, and the scenes between him and Tom Conti are really the reason to watch the movie. I mean, you never need another reason to watch a movie than David Bowie's in it. The guy is hypnotizing. I don't know that he's a good actor, but he's a fascinating actor, and I will watch anything he's in.
Right.
But the scenes between Tom Conti and Takeshi, or Beat Takeshi, or Takeshi Kitano, however, whatever name you want to use, if you've seen Battle Royale or Zatoichi the Blind Swordsman, you've seen him. He's terrific. So I really enjoyed Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, but I can understand why it's not a hugely famous movie anymore. The next movie I chose was called A Shock to the System, starring Michael Caine. And it's kind of a cheesy comedy thriller starring Michael Caine and the great Elizabeth McGovern and Peter Riegert.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with kind of a cheesy voiceover by Michael Caine, which is never a reason to stop watching a movie because Michael Caine does the
right.
cheesy voiceover.
Right. Which I know you don't like, except for when Michael Caine does it.
Oh, my God. There are probably exceptions. There are other people that I enjoy cheesy voiceover from, but they're like Orson Welles. You know, I mean, for me, Michael Caine is one of the actors that I will almost always watch a movie that he's in.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm fully aware that he doesn't give a shit what the movie is.
Right.
He's a professional actor, which means I once read a...
You take the part.
Yeah.
You take the part.
The autobiography of Carl Malden is named When Do I Start, which I think is the best name for a professional actor's biography that I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
I don't give a shit. If you're hiring me, I'm going to do it.
Right.
When do I fucking start?
Right.
And I feel that way about Michael Caine. And I once read a review of that terrible movie he made with Steven Seagal in the 90s.
Steven Seagal?
Oh, yeah. Steven Seagal and Michael Caine on Deadly Ground. In Alaska.
Yes.
About, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, terrible. And
he's an oil baron.
Yes. And the review quoted, what did it say? It said, Michael, quote, don't send me the script, just send me the paycheck, Kane.
Yes.
And then it reviewed the movie.
Right, which some people try to make as a knock.
I think it's a compliment.
You know,
he's good enough.
The job.
Yeah. You don't write the movie.
If somebody's going to give you hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to do something that isn't pornography.
And the next generation of huge Hollywood stars became producers, so they picked their own shit. Michael Caine had no interest in that.
I heard an interview with Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dustin Hoffman went to, he was...
Actor studio guy.
Actor studio. So he's not Stanislavski. He's a Strasberg guy.
Right.
And it's all about this, you know, bringing up
memories. We're getting into kind of acting.
You know, it's all very, remembering your dead grandmother's stuff.
When actors disparagingly talk about, quote, the method, they're talking about this shit.
They're talking about Strasberg. I always loved Hoffman.
Yeah, he's
and
great.
When you're a great actor, you're a great actor.
It works for some
people. You're a great actor, you can't tell what school of thought that they're doing. But what made me love him even more was they asked him about method acting, and it was like, you've always been a very serious actor.
Right.
And he's like, you know what? That's bullshit. He's like, you know why I was serious? Because when I was a kid, it was cool to be a serious actor.
Right.
All of the people who were cool were serious, and they were only doing art.
And now it's the exact opposite.
Right. And he said, if I were a kid today, I guarantee you I would never have gone to school. I never would have done anything that I'd done because that's what's cool now. And I was only following other people's leads.
Good for him.
Like, you know what?
I love him more.
He's probably full of shit because he's so talented that it doesn't matter.
Well, but no, same with everybody else.
But being honest about your motivations, what makes you want to do what you want to do is what makes a good actor, because that shapes your point of view. That leads you to interesting choices.
Yes.
When you try to say things that make you interesting, you're not interesting.
No.
You know, it's like...
Well, that's why some...
It's like Sandy said, don't be interesting, be interested.
Oh, yeah, great, awesome. Yay, Sandy. Good for you.
Boom!
All right. But, I mean, that's the way it's always been. It's always been. When you look at the Mamet stuff where he directs his own shit, the only people who are good are people who are good in other movies, too. The people who are his actors.
Oh, who knew he was a fucking conservative in sheep's clothing?
Everybody who's ever read his stuff.
Oh, I didn't... I read all of his early stuff, and I wasn't like, "Oh, this guy's a
no." You got to pay attention to who the hero. You got to pay attention to who the heroes of the piece are.
Ugh.
Whoever the heroes of the piece are, that's how the playwright usually thinks. Not always. There's some different playwrights, but with a lot of them, if you look at the hero of the piece, you can parse what this guy probably thinks, or this woman, or this whatever the person is who's writing the play. That's a broad, huge generalization, but to a lot of extent, it's true. Unless you're talking about genius.
What about Stolen?
All right, now this is what I'm talking about with June 100. It's about tangents. You have this plan. You have a plan. I'm going to watch all of these amazing Japanese movies, and then one night you're on Netflix and you've had half a bottle of wine.
Nicolas Cage shows up.
Oh my god! This is a Nicolas Cage joint. That is a clear knockoff of Taken, which is a movie that everybody loved but me. I hated Taken.
I mean,
and everybody else
literally
loved
this. This is how this movie came about. The studio executive came on and was like, my kid went and saw this movie where the daughter gets taken, the dad's really good at getting people back, and it made $50 million.
So let's do this movie.
Why aren't we doing this?
Where the girl gets stolen.
That's the name of the title.
And I purposely didn't write about this on Obstruction Review because I want to watch the next one, which is a movie called Safe, starring Jason Statham, that it seems to be the exact same movie. So I need to watch that too, and then I'll get to the point. So yeah, we'll move on. It was a fun, awful, awful movie that was kind of fun to watch.
You know,
Josh Lucas was given the most terrible fake leg and awful wig and made to say the dumbest lines, and he died 12 times like he was an alien or a Terminator.
This guy.
And it was incredible.
Come on.
But I will stop for a second on my seventh movie, which was called Morvern Caller.
Yes, let's talk about... I have no idea what this is about.
It's an independent British film from a couple years ago, and it's Samantha Morton and a writer-director who I was not familiar with.
Lynn Ramsey.
And I kind of loved it. I mean, there's no direct through line of plot. It's following a woman who is in a bad place in her life,
right,
who wakes up next to her dead boyfriend
and passes off her unpublished novel.
Well,
or his.
It's
as her own,
and,
right?
And that's part of the plot, but that's not really what the movie's about. The movie's about where she goes from there. She works at a grocery store, and what the hell happens when you wake up in that situation and your life's already a mess and you don't have direction, and all of a sudden you want to have direction. It's a series of interesting decisions from a terrible group of choices that are presented to her. And it's there's no linear plot. I mean, everything happens in an order, and everything makes sense from one bit to the next, but mm-hmm. it's not... it's like the movie Badlands. It's different from the movie Bonnie and Clyde, not only because it's about a different couple, but because the way the story is told is much less classic Hollywood and much more, this is a painting about this person. And I loved it. I mean, it's not getting great reviews everywhere I look, but I love
this
movie. 6.5
on IMDb.
Which is not bad at all. I'd give it an 8. I loved it.
You know what's occurring to me
after
a few beers here is when you're talking about films, you are very professorial. Like,
am I?
You bring up
I
other movies.
I
want to
be a jackass clown.
No, no, you're not.
Douchebag.
You'd like that because you don't want to – I think you don't want people to presume that you think you know everything.
I don't.
And that's not how you come off. It's like you remember all these comparisons and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Well,
because when I think of the movies, it's like very just like, yeah, I fuck up. I liked it.
Yeah, sure.
It didn't suck.
But no, I'm saying I think that too. But I think that while I'm watching it. And like 10 minutes into it, I go, oh, shit, I like this. And then I start to think, why do
I
like this
so much?
I
dig your comparison.
Much.
It helps me kind of understand what I might get from
something
it.
You got to know about me.
No, let's not go there.
Yeah. Okay.
No, let's go there. No,
no. I love movies.
Yes.
I love movies. And I don't think I've ever seen one that I can't find something amazing in.
Right.
Now, it might be a 1 second shot of a foot that was caught by accident. Do you know? If it's like a really shitty movie, that might be the case. But if it's... You know, we were talking about this earlier. One of my favorite movies to rewatch is is a movie called Undercover Blues from the mid to late 90s, starring Dennis Quaid and Kathleen Turner. And I once asked Kathleen Turner how she felt about a movie where people were allowed to be so over the top and seemed to be having so much fun. And she looked at me with a straight face and laughed for a second and said, oh my God, right? But she wasn't talking about herself.
Right. Right.
Which I'm kind of glad she somehow didn't think I was
talking
about her. She
didn't tie it in.
Because I thought, Well, my follow-up answer might have been, how much do you like Marlena Dietrich? Because I felt like there was a scene in there that was taken directly out of Witness for the Prosecution a few years later. But no, she thought I was talking about Fiona Shaw, who in this movie is utterly ridiculously over the top. But in just the best way. I mean,
right.
She's this amazing stage and film actress who right. has been in everything right. in the last 30 years and been amazing in it. But the reason to watch this movie, and if you're still listening, seriously, pick up Undercover Blues somewhere. You know, it's in the dollar bin. It's a terrible movie. It's directed by Herbert Ross, who is now unfortunately lost to us. But he directed movies like... My Blue Heaven, which you know, and Boys on the Side, and Steel Magnolias, and The Secret of My Success, which everybody loves.
Okay, so Footloose, and Max Dugan
Returns, and Pennies from Heaven, and California Suite, and The Goodbye Girl, and The 7% Solution, and The Sunshine Boys. In a weird way, and I'm sorry for running over you, in a weird way, he's a Hall of Fame director.
Mm-hmm.
He's got... That approach awesome. That is, I'm going to throw every idea I've ever had at a movie camera and see what the fuck sticks. And he might be the directing version of what we were just talking about with actors. Is shit got offered to him, and whether it was good or not, he said, yeah,
right.
I'll direct that shit.
Right.
And so he directed this movie. The reason to watch it is one Stanley Tucci.
Mm, always worth
Everybody watching. Loves the Tucci.
This guy is... just great.
He plays a small-time, shitty mugger from the streets of New Orleans named Muerte. My name is Muerte. I see death. That's the character he plays in this movie. And he is
all right, I'm
so gleefully absent of reality in everything he does that... you cannot take your eyes off the guy.
Well, I gotta watch it, and I think we need to sway back into
June 100,
because this is a whole other episode. Movies that suck, but we love.
Yes, okay, but I'm saying I can appreciate genuinely something from every movie I've ever seen in my
life,
and I have the kind of memory that I fucking remember everything as long as it's not important. If it's something that I'm supposed to do or remember
right.
or
right,
like
right, right.
I've promised I'm going to accomplish this by this date,
right.
I have to
Not
write it down.
There. Right.
And then lose what I've written it down on
right.
and then forget about it.
Right.
But if it's a movie or a song lyric or anything else.
It's just there.
It's just there and it's there forever.
Right. An idiot savant, some people would say.
An idiot in every sense.
All right. So let's quickly sort of... go through some of Grog's list
yeah.
here. His number three is Now You See Me, so that's in the theaters now.
Right, which I'm kind of excited to see. It's one of the ones that as yeah. soon as I see the first couple images, I close my eyes and go, la, la, la,
right,
la,
you don't
la,
want, yeah, because
la,
we,
la,
yeah.
la, 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 la.
Anybody who reads your stuff knows
yes.
how much.
Fuck previews.
I mean, this guy went from excited to see Superman to, I don't even know if you're going to go now.
Well... I'm really angry about yeah. the most recent Superman trailer.
I know.
Have we talked about the most recent one?
Well, I
the
know.
The most recent one shows that this is how the movie works. It shows
yes.
Maximus, the slave. What's his name? Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Opening his own shirt, but like his hoodie. Like his alien
right.
hoodie.
His super hoodie.
Yeah, his super hoodie.
From, you know,
to show the S on his
Krypton.
Chest and say, this... is the hope in our world. And then it doesn't show the next scene that we've already seen in a different preview
right.
that has yeah. Superman say, in my world, this means hope.
Right. Well, in this world, it's an S.
Yes. I can't imagine that a movie that has both of those scenes in it can be good. One or the other. But both... means that you hate me a little bit as an audience member. As an audience member, you hate my powers of thought.
Right, right.
You need to show me both of those scenes. Like I've forgotten the stupidity of the first scene, so you got to show it to me
right.
again.
Well, you know, and it's something we've experienced in theater where you have a heavy-handed director who's like, look, they're too dumb to know. We have to hammer it in so they know what we're talking
about. I once played a character that comes on stage and tells the queen that her father is dead, or the princess that her father is dead, and now she's queen, and then he leaves. The director had me come on stage at the end of the play in a black, like, Amadeus costume as a sound of wind playing goes over the loudspeakers, and I point out at the audience.
I don't like where this is
and
going.
And bring it back. That, well, after the main character has a heart attack and dies and gets carried off stage, is not in the script either. That's what a bad director can do to a piece of good drama.
Right.
And that's what I'm afraid happened to The Man of Steel.
We're still going.
Yes.
So...
Oh, no, I'm going to pay my $50 to take Grog, the kids to see it. Yes.
Number four, and this is kind of relevant,
yeah,
you know, happening now, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
I know. He has not been familiar with the Star Trek.
Three stars.
I know. I think the problem is, and I'm sorry, Grog, I tweeted him about it. I know,
this.
I watched it. Why don't you give me your take on it?
Well, I asked him, I was like, three stars? I'm curious.
Universally, this is the best Star Trek movie.
A five-star rating if you give this a three-star rating.
Yeah, and his answer was telling. His five-star was Children of Men, which is very low on the sci-fi. It is the premise is sci-fi. The movie is a thriller.
Right.
The premise is sci-fi.
And it shows his age.
I think it does as well.
I think, because, I mean... I was a kid when this came out.
Yes, well, so
was you have a different experience.
No, I think, again, it shows his relative recent entry into loving movies.
When I mean, because for me, and I can always say,
I might be wrong.
And of course,
I think
all
you're in your 30s, Grog.
It's, this is, I remember my first experience with Ricardo Montalban was
Fantasy Island.
So sure. I knew him as one thing, as the good guy, the guy who welcomes people, and he's all-knowing and kind of has – he knows where things are going. And then I see him as a bad guy. And when I was, I don't know, 11 or however old I was when it came out, I bought into this guy being bad, and he was a tough guy, and the line "revenge is a dish best served cold" stuck with me. Like, it was there for the rest of my life. That's Ricardo Montalban's line.
Absolutely.
So I don't argue with Grog at all about, you know, looking back, does it hold up? I don't know. It holds up for me because as a kid I saw this in the theater I loved it.
And every movie that you see, whether it's a new movie or an old movie, you see two ways. You see it through the modern context, which is the world that we live in now. What does this movie mean to us? But you have to watch it in the context of what was happening in the world then. Like, if I was to watch Network
right now,
it would be a straightforward condemnation of current media.
Okay.
If I were to watch Network in 1976... it's a satire of where the media might be heading. So, I mean, that's about how far we've gone so far this month into the June 100. We're both, well, I think Grog is like right on pace. I'm a good two movies behind where I need to be.
Right.
And so I'll get there. I got time. Like I say, I'm pre-employed. So I have days. I have days free.
Yes. Brilliant title, too.
Well, I have a start date. August 19th, I start rehearsals for the 39 Steps at Center Stage Theater.
Right, which is going to kick your ass.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to be skinny by the end of that shit.
It's going to feel good. I can't wait to see that, actually.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
So that was the last half of the first 10 or so movies that at Grog and Eric at Totally Kidding have watched for their hashtag June 100 movie challenge.
We're all caught up. Now, by the time you listen to this, there'll be 20 more to talk about.
Oh, my goodness. We got 100 movies here.
Yeah. Now, next week, we're going to have to figure out a way to do this a little quicker.
100 movies.
Yeah.
But
200, because if we're talking about Grog and me, and there are at least like two dozen other people attempting this around the world.
We're doubling.
Yeah.
But that was... The Lazy Muse Podcast, episode 15/B.
Yes.
Part 2.
Is there a slash there? Is that the...
Duh.
All right.
Duh.
Zwei. So here we are. Who are you?
I am Jimmy G. You can follow me on Twitter at The Lazy Muse.
And I'm Eric Grattan. You can follow me on Twitter at Totally Kidding. Or you can read what I write a couple times a week. I'm also covering the June 100 stuff on there at pinetarpress.com under the heading Obstructed Review.
You can find Obstructed Review also at thelazymuse.com, as well as all of our show notes and all of the Lazy Muse podcast episodes. Leave us comments at verylazymuse@gmail.com, or just go to Facebook at facebook.com/ The Lazy Muse. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about, what you think we shouldn't talk about, what we got wrong, or what a bunch of a-holes we are.
You're a-holes, though.
Yeah.
Now, this is the very last chance to win our Reebok challenge. You have until the very next time we convene at this table to figure out who won.
Right. So get on it. Get up on it. Get up on it.
9% ABV, ladies and gentlemen.
I have to go pick up my kid at elementary school.
Yes. It's been great. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening. We'll talk at you later. I'm not sure.